It's already 11 o'clock, so most of the people we'll try to ask today to speak will be people who haven't spoken before, with a couple of exceptions. And there's a couple of emails to be read out from the ladies and the gentlemen. But I'd just like to ask His Holiness... Okay. Rinpoche, would you like to read a few emails from some godbrothers and so on? Okay. Rancho Peru, would you like to please speak?
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutane Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sinamane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nevasesa Sanyavadi Paschajade Satarane. Not really much to say after hearing that. I've realized the last couple of weeks since Tribhuvanath left, I've realized that the experience of bereavement is can be quite a powerful thing, and that you don't always realize how closely you're connected with someone until you lose them, of course. But my memories of Tribhuvanath are mostly they go back a long way. I'm very grateful to him that before he went to Brazil, he did come to see me a couple of times, and so I do have some recent memories to hold as well. But the real impressions that Tribhuvanath made on me go back many, many years. One or two people had sort of raised this. I sort of hesitate to raise it, but I want to, because I think it's an important point, and that is that there was a period during the 1980s when Tribhuvanath went away, and none of us knew where he was, actually, for about, I can't remember, 2, 3, 4 years, possibly. He just sort of vanished off the face, sort of complete radio silence. And in a way, I sort of got used to him not being around then. And then suddenly he turned up again. And it was a different Tribhuvanath, of course, because he'd experienced some things. But what I wanted to particularly sort of just be aware of was that before Tribhuvanath went away, in my very limited vision, perhaps not so limited, my intuition, for me he was always a pure devotee. From really the day that I practically knew what the word meant. When I joined the temple, we had 14 devotees living in Berry Place. I think there might have been about 20. And then 2 weeks after I joined, all the leadership went to India. It was a very strange thing, just because Prabhupada called them. Mukunda was around, but he was in the city and we hardly saw him. So we were a very young and inexperienced crowd of 14 boys and girls. And Tribhuvanath was our leader, not because anyone had made him the leader, but because that's what he was. He was a pillar of strength. He was always the first one into the breach. He was the one who was up the last at night and up first thing in the morning. He was the one who was always sort of rallying the troops, and he never let up, just like he never did. I think anyone who knows him, he didn't change in that way at all. So I have, you know, very precious recollections of just how he showed us. He epitomized the ideal of someone who's completely surrendered to Prabhupada. And the fact that, you know, he had his unique way of doing things, very different from the way I did things. Completely different, two completely different people. that didn't matter at all because it was his motivation was just so uncomplicated, just to serve Prabhupada's feet. He was only 17 when he joined the temple, so he probably was still 17, perhaps 18 then. I was 20. But although he was so young, it was as if he was old. In fact, it's a funny thing that when he was young, he seemed old, and yet when he was old, he seemed young. So I'm very fortunate that, you know, in those first few years when I was still living a pretty renounced life myself, nothing like him, but I had a chance to spend a lot of time with Tribhuvanath. As the years went by, I mean, even I was first married in 1971. I was the only household devotee in the yatra. And I was an object of some skepticism, shall I say, from everyone else was so busy being brahmacharis, or brahmachari. Well, we only had three brahmacharinis, if I remember. And to be married was kind of letting the side down. But Tribhuvanath used to come and visit me in Manchester, and he always told me that I wasn't very happy as a householder. I'm speaking now of my first marriage. And Tribhuvanath always used to say, I like being around you, Rancho, because you're so miserable as a householder. I never feel tempted to follow your example. So, as you know, as years went by, and especially... well, Tribhuvanath went to India, I suppose, in about 75, something like that, and Prabhupada wanted him there, and he had a lot of close association with Prabhupada in India, and I think he must have had a fantastic time. I understand that some of the sort of senior leadership, they couldn't really cope with Tribhuvanath. There was an incident in Los Angeles. I was there for a year in 1975, and... that was when the Los Angeles temple was perhaps at its sort of strongest, I think, that it ever was before or since, in a way. It was very powerful. I believe that's true. The Chaitanya Charitamrita and so on was being published at the time. And everything was very organized, sort of regimented, and the Mangal Aarti, you couldn't get to lead a kirtan. There was a sort of a pecking order. You know, if you'd been in the temple for a year or two, then you could possibly get your name on the list, and then you'd be promoted sort of from Tulsi Puja maybe to, you know, the evening aarti, and then gradually you could aspire one day to be able to lead Mangal Aarti. So one day I went into Mangal Aarti, and we were all there, and, you know, you expect to hear one of the familiar... chosen few sing forth, and suddenly I heard this, you know, Samsara Dava. I turned around, and there was Tribhuvanath, you know, and everyone was in a state of shock. Who is this guy? Because he just saw, you know, he had a mridanga, he saw a microphone, the curtains open, okay, you know. And afterwards, everyone was saying, who was that? But I think that Tribhuvanath was so spontaneous in his service that if you didn't know him, you might have mistaken that, you know, for, I don't know, a troublemaker or something like that. But if you knew him, of course, you know, you knew that it's because he only cared about one thing. So he went to India, and but he didn't. After a few years, he came back, and I was in Manchester again. He came to see me, and he said that, you know, I can't seem to fit in. And you know, he'd had a few sort of rebuffs here and there, And so he was sort of thinking more and more of just, he just wanted to preach. That's all he wanted to do. And particularly he wanted to do Harinam. And so, you know, he was looking here and there, where could he do it? And one way or another, yes, he went to the Middle East. That's right. You know, he was in, that's how he came to be in Beirut, in Egypt, because those were places nobody else would bother with. So he could go there and he could be himself for Prabhupada. That's all he wanted to do. So in a way, you know, that kind of explains why there was a point at which he just sort of disappeared over the horizon. And when he came back, he, of course, he picked up pretty much where he left off. And I didn't see him much after that, because by that time I was married and obviously, you know, living a completely independent life myself. Perhaps we at least shared a sense of, we both enjoyed being independent. Maybe that's something that we had in common. But he used to occasionally come to see me. And what I'm eternally grateful for to Tribhuvanath is that, as I said last week, he just accepted me as I am. And I know that's how he dealt with everyone. He just, although he demanded so much for himself, he did not demand from his friends anything other than just their companionship, and he always appreciated a person's qualities for who they are. And for that I'm eternally grateful to him. I asked if I could read out a letter which our godbrother Janakaraj sent from New Zealand. There was a period in 72 when Janakaraj, myself, were together with Tribhuvanath opening a temple in Manchester. Anyway, Janakaraj worked with Tribhuvanath a lot in the early days. He joined in 1971. And as he's not here, I'd like to read out this letter. Dearest Tribhuvanath Prabhu, please accept my most humble obeisances at your lotus feet. All glories to our spiritual master and father, Srila Prabhupada. You were among the very first disciples of His Divine Grace in the UK. You were never assuming, yet bore an indescribable, unique, and charismatic countenance. You have left me. You were always my elder godbrother, and I shall always be indebted to you for your guidance and example in being a Vaishnava. I remember as a new devotee, I was sent to Edinburgh. I had never been outside Wales until I joined the temple and moved to London. There I met persons like Bhumadev, Jai Hari, and Dhananjaya. There was lots of talk of a dynamic devotee running the Edinburgh temple. I was in a car on my second day in Edinburgh and had not as yet met the temple president, Tribhuvanath, who was always busy with some project. As we rounded a roundabout, someone said, "There's Tribhuvanath!" I looked to see a bald-headed person clothed in saffron robes tearing around the corner on a motorbike with attached sidecar. I should mention that Tribhuvanath's motorbike and sidecar was... this was his great discovery, for in those days we used to finance the temples partly by selling incense. And he found that he could, you know, pack the sidecar full. Somebody must have given it to him. Somebody else will know the story, I'm sure, who was there. So he used to pack the sidecar with incense. This is 1971 from the Edinburgh Temple. And then go off and sell incense all day. Sometimes he could be gone, I gather, for more than a day. He'd be gone for like two days or 3 days until he'd sold all the incense. And then he'd return again with some money. And I asked him once, I said, "Tribhuvanath, how can you do that? You know, I mean, you spend all day just... on your own, you know, crisscrossing the country, how do you maintain your sort of Krishna consciousness?" Because he always was so Krishna conscious. So he said, "It was very simple." He said, "If I have an undisturbed morning program and I can chant all my rounds, then I go out. But if, as sometimes happens, if you're a temple president, I get distracted and things don't really work out, then I don't go." And I think that epitomizes how practical Tribhuvanath was. He was full of practical wisdom of that sort. Jana Crouch continues, "When I later met you, I was impressed by your energy. It appeared that you single-handedly did almost everything. You were happy and extremely friendly, and dealt with everyone with great kindness and intelligence. You were always most patient. That I would discover when you later became my temple president in Manchester. I was very lucky that in 72, Tribhuvanath and I went together up to Manchester, and he was my temple president as well at the same time. I remember one day a couple of skinheads approached us, and one of them kicked the drum as he played it, leading us on Harinam with an intensity that shook the earth. You had a unique pronunciation of the mantra, especially the words Hare, which I always thought you pronounced Hadi. Your kirtans were always ecstatic. After this incident, you confided in me that you were a bit afraid when he broke the mridanga. I thought, what honesty. Another of the unlimited ways in which you inspired me. I remember you smiling. I think you were always smiling. You once told me that I was your expansion in the mode of ignorance. I was a bit hurt, but I guess if the shoe fits. I would watch you on Sankirtan, always smiling. You weren't the biggest collector, but everyone who met you collected a bit of Krishna and left smiling themselves. We would come down for Mangal Aarti and find you asleep, sitting cross-legged, hand in bead bag in the temple room. I wonder if you ever slept horizontally. I saw your presentation of the philosophy was always most Shastric and insightful. You echoed and amplified the conviction we were all developing as fledglings on the golden road of bhakti. It must have been about 2 years ago that I last had your personal association. We were both at a festival in the UK, and I was thrilled to get your association again after many years. You as a saffron-clad devotee, and myself as one of the throng trying to have a good time. I remember there was a boy sitting next to us, somewhat the worse for substance abuse. You spoke to him, and his reply gave no indication that he had any grasp on reality whatsoever. I remember your compassionate concern, yet your great humour at the situation. I remember thinking how little you had changed, how friendly, how intelligent, and fixed in the truth, perhaps a little more wizened with the years. You were always my friend and guide. They say you left your body, your eyes large as if looking at something. You closed your eyes peacefully and were gone. I know that Lord Chaitanya was the object of your vision. What can I do now but lament that you have gone? You have left us, and the only way we can get your association again is to go back to Godhead. Please always smile on your younger brother. Perhaps one day I can get the association of my sattvic self. I beg to remain your eternal servant, Janakaraj Das. Jai Tribhuvanath.
Thank you, Ranchor Prabhu. Just quickly, you were mentioning two stories there, which I have one or two details to fill in as well, about the Mangal Aarti. Tribhuvanath Prabhu, he said that everyone was afraid to, because there were one big whoever was meant to be singing, and everyone was afraid to sing because he wasn't actually there. So the Mangal Aarti started and everyone wouldn't do anything. And so he just thought, this is ridiculous. So he just started singing. Also, the sidecar, he went to buy it, and the guy said, you sure you can drive it? And he went, yeah, no problem. And he drove it down the hill and tumbled over a roundabout, actually crashed. But he learned, obviously. So, just to fill in. Thank you. Hare Krishna.